This is a Media Lab podcast. Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, your self-described Sondheim expert. I have a great love for a song that can be lightly sung and can be performed with a little soft shoe, which kind of describes at least one of the songs we'll be discussing here today. First and foremost, Black Lives Matter. I'd like to highlight a petition, which I'll link to in the show notes. It's from Camille A. Brown, and it's entitled Dear White American Theater. I just want to read one paragraph from it. We stand on this ground as Black, Indigenous, people of color theater makers, multi-generational, at varied stages in our careers, but fiercely in love with the theater. Too much to continue it under abuse. We will wrap the least privileged among us in protection and fearlessly share our many truths. Obviously, I am doing a podcast about a white man that featured many white characters, originally at least, that was produced and directed by white people. And while I think that Sondheim shows, which he collaborated on, speak to human truths, I know that a vibrant and rich theater must include works from creators that are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And I think this is something that Sondheim would agree with. He's been quoted as being fairly pessimistic about the future of theater, in particular musical theater, where he's been quoted as saying that it's a cottage industry with fewer new cottages and more refurbished ones every season. The proliferation of jukebox musicals is an example of how storytelling is becoming less important. I want to see those other stories. I want those voices to be heard. Because as Audre Lorde has said, it is not our differences that divide us, it is our inability to recognize, accept, and celebrate those differences. Like I said, the link to the petition is in the show notes. Now it's time for Plodding Along. So Plodding Along is the part of the show where I describe to you what's happening in the plot. So after the principal cast sung Waiting for the Girls Upstairs, they're shaken by the memories from the past. They scatter as some of the other Follies girls take to the stage. In particular, three members perform numbers which they were well known for. Emily and Theodore Whitman sing Rain on the Roof, Solange Lafitte performs A Paris, and Hedy Walker brings down the house with Broadway Baby. My guest today is Jonathan Chisholm, who has been on before. He's an actor and singer who lives in the United States, and we had a great chat about these three songs. I also want to give a shout out to my Patreon. Of course, I'm honored by the people who support me at the Little Things You Do Together tier, but I want to give a shout out to new patron Jack Healy at the God That's Good tier. For as long as he supports me at that level, you'll hear his name every episode. Now, I'm going to go thank some sponsors, and then after that, it'll be my conversation with Jonathan Chisholm. Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode of Putting It Together is brought to you by Park Power, a provider of electricity and natural gas in Alberta that offers low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. In Alberta, you get to choose who to buy your energy from. If you switch retailers, nothing changes about the delivery of electricity or natural gas to your home or business. If you have an existing contract, you're going to want to find out the terms for leaving. If you don't, then it's even easier to sign up for Park Power. The choice is yours, and there's a better deal available to you. Learn more at parkpower.ca. This week, Putting It Together is also brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network. So let's listen to one of our other great shows.
You know, I love books, and I would like to join a book club, but it seems like such a big commitment.
Why is that?
Reading a whole book in a month, that takes a lot of time.
Well, what if it was only one chapter, say, a week?
Organizing to meet up with people is a lot of work.
Well, what if it was only half an hour, whenever it worked for you?
That would be great.
The Read-Along. It's a mini book club for your ears.
Join my wife, Anita.
And my husband, Scott.
On a weekly journey through a good book,
one chapter at a time.
Part of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB.
And subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts can be found.
Listen to the rain on the roof go.
Pit, pitty, pat.
Pit, pitty, pat.
Pitty,
sit, kitty, cat. We won't get home for hours. Relax and listen to the rain.
Jonathan Chisholm, thank you so much for returning back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me again.
And not to date this too much, but we were both practicing our government-instituted self-isolation, I'm pretty sure. So what a perfect time to talk about some Sondheim.
You know, there's nothing better that I like to do on a nice, warm day here in Georgia in my house than talk about Sondheim.
And as I told you before we started recording, it's snowing here. So it's great. It's the great dualities of life.
Absolutely.
We get to talk about a triplet of songs here today. We're going on Rain on the Roof, A Perry, and then Broadway Baby. But I actually want to start here first. What is your relationship with Follies?
Yeah, okay, so Follies is, interestingly enough, after I got into Sondheim with Sweeney Todd and Into the Woods, and you know the ones that most people like hear first or whatever, Follies was actually one of the next ones I heard. And I was very young at the time. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but that's okay. Because it has some of his most well-known like standards in it. Like if you go through any Sondheim songbook, I'm Still Here, Losing My Mind, Broadway Baby. And I wanted to know what the show was. So I found the CD, I found the script, I read through it, and I was like, wow, I honestly don't understand a lot of this because I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, right. I'm like 18 or something, but I like the mood of the piece. And I like kind of, I think I know what it's trying to say. And it's
Do you have any sense of what a Follies was?
Yes. Yes. Because, I'm a big history buff, especially in the theater, and, mm-hmm. and the Follies are one of the biggest parts of the early part of the 20th century of theater, especially in New York.
Yeah, it's one of those areas that I'm so fascinated with. I think everyone has like that time period that they just lock into for whatever reason. And I just love this whole concept of that like 1920s and 30s glitz with the showgirls and like the big feathers and all those things.
Oh, sure.
Granted, it was also a time of like rampant racism and inequality. I don't know what the right word is. There's that mythology, I think, that gets brought over by like Ziegfeld and like all these like larger than life personalities from that turn of the century period.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely calls back when show business was felt more, it really felt very theatrical in wow. how it was presented. And you know, as time has gone by, it becomes more of a show business as opposed to show business, if that emphasis is different.
It's like a throwback to Company. You have to emphasize the right word in that sentence.
Right.
For me too, and I've been trying to figure out in the last couple of weeks as I've been prepping for this Follies season, I've been trying to really figure out where it started from. And I haven't come up with a great answer. So maybe by the end of this season, I'll have figured it out. But I have been somewhat obsessed with what is referred to as the Great American Songbook.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how do these songs get picked? Like, where did they come from? What's the backstory of some of these? And this is back in a time, right, when the popular music of the day was theater music, you know, that is your Noel Cowards and Cole Porters and Gershwins and all those people that were writing songs for the theater, which would then be them broadly popular in the world. And then, I mean, certainly in the 60s, that started to like dip off. And absolutely, by the time this show comes out, that is long gone, where the majority of songs made for theater are not becoming popular. Even after this, only a couple. I mean, Sondheim would have Send in the Clowns, Hair would have some stuff that would get onto the radio, and that might be about it, unless you can think of any other songs that have actually transferred. But it's definitely not the norm like it was back then.
Right, it's definitely the rarity nowadays. I guess maybe the most recent thing that maybe hit the charts somewhat is maybe Hamilton.
Oh, that's true. There might be. I don't know how far or how high that charted, but there's probably been like adaptations and
sure,
covers of those
yeah.
songs for sure.
But it is, it's a lot more rare than it used to be. And now, you know, the pop song has, as you said, changed from theater music to more rock music influenced. And it's definitely an interesting trajectory.
Is there any like love of that early music? I say early, but I'm that's a huge swath from like I'm saying like 1920s to like early 1950s.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a performer, at least how my voice sits, I do very well with those type of songs, just where they place and how they're meant to be sung. I personally don't have like a rock singing voice. So
sure.
Even when I sing a rock song, it sounds like a musical theater song. So right. It's nice to just, I think maybe it was the times, but I think a lot of times the lyrics had to be a lot more clever to say what they wanted to say, mm-hmm. whether it be because of censorship or just because people were a little more verbose in their vocabulary then.
Yeah, there's just a playfulness of language and stuff there that I find. Like the wit is definitely what is preferred, I find, in some of those songs, or at least in a lot of stuff that I know of. And maybe it's that also that tendency to get into melodrama. So like when you're in love, you're very in love. And when you're scared, you're very scared. And when you want to be funny, you're trying your hardest to be funny. So there's no middle point sometimes in that early stuff.
Yeah, those songs very much savor the moment. They don't so much advance a story as they savor a very specific moment in the show, which is wonderful. I mean, Cole Porter was great at that. The Gershwins, any of them, they just had this, they were really great at finding something and keying in on it and then making these very relatable, specific songs.
Now, when we're talking about these three songs, this is coming at a time in the show where some of the tension is starting to really ramp up for like our four main leads. We have Sally and Phyllis and Buddy and Ben. And then these three performances happen like right after one another, kind of to break that tension up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reason that you had that you wanted to speak about these songs?
I love these songs. I think these are three great examples of Sondheim at his best in terms of simplicity of style and lyric, and they are just so gosh darn entertaining to listen to.
They are like you. These are the ones that you can absolutely take out and perform without any knowledge of what the show is around it, which again was something that was pretty popular to do, like taking out a song completely out of context and still be able to sing it. And Sondheim kind of pushed against that a lot in his career, but this is a great example of showing like he could do this if he wanted to. He could actually play the part of, yeah, I'll just write a song that sounds like a 1920s novelty song, or I can write a Cole Porter song if you want me to. It's a really great showcase of his talent, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, and he also, and then he's also, because he's Sondheim, manages to make it all some very much fly together back into the theme of what the show is about at the end.
This is maybe fast-forwarding way too fast, but you're right. I mean, whereas Rain on the Roof and Opry are these like really fun songs, and I have a lot of joy listening to them, really, it's Broadway Baby. Like, that's what these are leading up to, that third song that kind of sums up both the theme of the show and is also a song that could be taken into sung in any cabaret that you wanted to go to.
Right. Not to bury the lead too much.
All right. Well, let's jump into it here. So the first of these songs that gets sung is called Rain on the Roof. And to give credit where it's due, this is sung by these characters named Emily and Theodore Whitman. In the fiction of the show, there are these old-timey like singing and dancing couple, and this is their song that they got a lot of fame with. Now, a recurring theme that has probably already been said on the show, but who knows? Time is weird when I record these episodes out of order. The original Broadway cast recording does a very big disservice, I think, to the Folly score because it cuts out so much stuff. Rain on the Roof is one of them. It does not even appear at all on that original Broadway cast album. So that's unfortunate. But in the original production, Emily and Theodore were played by Marcia Stringer and Charles Welch. In the 1987 production in London, it was performed by Pearl Carr and Teddy Johnson. And in the 2017 National Theatre version, it was Patty Newton and Bert Newton, who are actually a married couple, which is pretty fun.
Oh, that's nice.
Now, before I get into the lyrics, this is what is called a novelty song. This is what Sondheim writes in his book about how novelty songs were this bouncy and catchy, often with a title which featured a repetitive gimmick. So I just picked one that we're going to listen to here now. This is Tiny Tim singing Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Tiptoe through by the window, that is where I'll be come tiptoe through the tulip with me. Oh, tiptoe from the garden, by the garden, on the willow tree, come tiptoe through the tulip with me.
Another good example is, of course, is like when the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along. It's one of those types of things where it's that repetitive thought throughout the entire song. So, Jonathan, I get to perform for you here. So please hold your applause until the end of my performance.
Absolutely.
and pretend that there's actually two people singing this instead of just me. So Rain on the Roof goes like this. Listen to the rain on the roof go pit pitty pat, pit pitty pat, pitty, sit kitty cat, we won't get home for hours. Relax and listen to the rain on the roof go plunk plunk a plink, plunk plunk a plink, plank a let's have a drink and shelter from the showers. Rain, rain, don't go away, fill up the sky. Rain through the night, we'll stay cozy and dry. Listen to the rain on the roof go pit pitty pat, plink a plink, plank, pity that it's not a hurricane. Listen, plink to the lovely rain.
Yay!
So that's Rain on the Roof.
Listen to the rain on the roof go pit pitty pat, pit pitty pat, pitty sit kitty cat. We won't get home for hours. Relax and listen to the rain on the roof go
plunk plunk a plink,
plunk plunk a plink, plank a. Let's have a drink and shelter from the showers. Rain, rain, don't go away, fill up the sky. Rain through the night, we'll stay cozy and dry. Woo-hoo! Listen to the rain on the roof go pit pitty pat, plunk a plink, plank. Pity that it's not a hurricane. Listen, plink to the lovely rain.
One thing I just wanted to mention, too, about that song, in the 1987 version, they actually do a reprise of the last two stanzas again before they move on to the next song. But, Jonathan, tell me about this. What do you like about this song?
This song is just so much fun. It's just, it's so, I love just the as you said, there's a great alliteration and repetitive nature to it. The pit-pitty-pat, pit-pitty-pat, pitty. It's just so, like, bouncy and fun and it really gives you the image of what these two characters who, like most of the people in the show, we don't really get much about them. We just get glimpses. And it really shows you why they were so gosh darn popular in their time.
Yeah, and this is one of those other ones that it does benefit if you can actually see the performances, I think, sometimes. Because depending on how you want to stage this, like, they could be, like, tap dancers. They could actually have umbrellas that they're using. Like, I've seen a bunch of different ways that people have interpreted this song. And it's really fun. Like, this is really a great one for the choreographers in whoever's putting it on.
Right.
To really go wild and have fun with it.
Absolutely. And it's just so tightly written. It's such a, just a tight, tight lyric. And so just right on with it's not an ounce of fat on it. It's so good.
Yeah. It's also interesting, too, like with those kisses that I had to do, like Sondheim would return to that. I mean, By the Sea from Sweeney Todd also uses that concept of using kisses to like punctuate information. So it's something he would even come back to years later.
Indeed. It's a great little kind of hallmark of this kind of sweet kind of romanticism, which is used to great effect here and, of course, in that song.
Now, Jonathan, have you seen the cinematic classic Paddington 2?
I have not, actually. No.
Okay. I would recommend doing that. If you have any access to Netflix, you can actually watch both of them, Paddington 1 and Paddington 2. I think 2 is actually much better. I only bring that up because they actually sing Rain on the Roof in that movie. It's actually Hugh Grant who does a song and dance break during the credits of that movie.
Oh my lord.
Listen to the rain on the roof go pit pitty pat,
pit pitty pat,
pit. Sit kitty cat, we won't get home for hours. Relax and listen to the rain on the roof go
blunk blunk a blink,
blunk blunk a blink,
blunk.
Let's have a drink and shelter from the showers. Rain,
Yeah, it is phenomenal. Spoiler alert, he's gone to prison. And so he's in like these pink and black prison uniforms doing a song and dance number. I haven't figured out if it's actually Hugh Grant singing. And they do wide shots for the dancing, so I don't even know if it's him dancing necessarily. But the effect is effective, so it's nice to see that break. But
nice.
I'll include a link to the YouTube video. We can just watch that portion if you want to in the show notes. But it's a fun little break.
Nice. I'll have to check it out.
All right. Well, then we come to this next song, A Paris. And this is going to be the one that is directly referencing Cole Porter. Before we talk about Cole Porter here, though, this is performed by this character called Solange. And in the original, it's Fifi D'Orsay. In the 1987 version, it's Maria Charles. And then in the 2017 National Theater version, it's Geraldine Fitzgerald. What can you tell me about Cole Porter, Jonathan?
Wow, Cole Porter is just one of the great, one of those great composer lyricists from the early part of the 20th century. He was known for his clever and yet campy lyrics. He basically perfected the Liszt song, which is a song that lists a bunch of different items of the same thing, usually the same idea, as we talked about. And he was just one of the most influential. And also, he had such a distinct style. He was very easy to, if you were imitating him, people knew who you were imitating.
Yeah, like this is what even Sondheim says. It's like, he says, Porter is the easiest of the major lyricists to imitate because his style is so extreme in its distinction. And it's true. Like when you kind of lock into Cole Porter, you can kind of see his crutches that he leans on, but also when he really excels at that sort of stuff. He mentions too about the fact like Cole Porter was this gay man, and even though he married a woman, didn't really hide the fact that that's what was going on. And in his lyrics, he never tries to run away from that. Like, to the point where Sondheim even says, like, the subtext becomes text sometimes in his songs because it's so on the nose what he's talking about.
It's very true. I think my favorite example of that is a song from Kiss Me, Kate. Every Tom, mm-hmm. Dick, or Harry. Every Harry, Tom, or Dick. Dick a dick.
Right.
Dick a dick.
Yeah. Yeah, so not exactly like trying to fool anyone here in that case.
Sure.
So A Paris is essentially a Liszt song, so listing off all these places that this lady has been in her life. So let's get into it. Now, this would work better if I had a very obnoxious French accent. I don't, so we'll go through some of these stanzas here together. Sorry, it's the original Broadway cast, once again, cutting things. The original Broadway cast cuts out the first two stanzas of this song, which is also, I don't know why they did that, but they did. It starts off by saying this. New York has neon, Berlin has bars, but ah, Paris. Shanghai has silk and Madrid guitars, but ah, Paris. In Cairo, you find bizarre bazaars. In London, pip-pip, you sip tea. But when it comes to love, none of the above compares Compré. So if it's making love that you're thinking of, Paris.
New York has neon, Berlin has bars, but ah, Paris. Shanghai has silk and Madrid guitars. In Cairo you find bizarre bazaars. In London, pip-pip, you sip tea. But when it comes to love, none of the above compares Compris. So if it's making love that you're thinking of, Paris.
Anything from those first two stanzas that you wanted to bring up?
Maybe one of my favorite lyrics I've ever heard in a song. In Cairo, you find bizarre, bizarre.
Yeah, it's fun. I like that.
It's so clever. It's just so, it's not too clever. It's just clever enough.
Just clever enough. That's right. And at the very end here too, like I said, like I've heard it done that way where it's just like said straight up. But then there's, I believe it's in the 1987 one that like really like over accentuates the, like the Frenchness of it. It's like, like that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
So again, it's one of those things that like the performer really brings a lot to this.
Absolutely.
So we continue on and she says, I have seen the ruins of Rome. I've been in the igloos of Nome. I have gone to Moscow. It's very gay. Well, anyway, on the 1st of May, I have seen Rangoon and Soho, and I like them more than So-So. But when there's a moon, goodbye, Rangoon. Allo, Montmartre, allo.
I have seen the ruins of Rome. I've been in the igloos of Nome. I have gone to Moscow. It's very gay. Well, anyway, on the 1st of May, I have seen Rangoon and Soho. And I like them more than So-So. But when there's a moon, goodbye, Rangoon. Allô, Montmartre, allô.
Once again, I've forgotten to do something, but this is a good time to bring up, like, one of the songs that Sondheim brings up in his book that he's kind of referencing in this song is, of course, Cole Porter in general, but actually specifically, I Have a Shooting Box in Scotland. Are you familiar with that song at all, Jonathan?
I'm actually not.
Let's play a little bit of it now. This is sung by Fred Astaire and Bing Crosby, so this will be fun.
But my favorite pastime is collecting country places. I've a shooting box in Scotland.
How may I be your guest?
I've a chateau in Touraine.
Fine country, I love it.
I have a silly little chalet.
Where's this?
In the Interlochen Valley.
Uh-huh.
I have a hacienda in Spain.
Ole, bravo! I have a private fjord in Norway. I have a villa close to Rome.
And in traveling, it's really quite a comfort to know that you're never far from home.
I only bring that up because, I mean, it's a different melody and everything, of course, but they bring in, like, the entire, they bring up Nome and Moscow and that sort of stuff in that song as well. So I just think it's fun that he's using this song, but also putting his own kind of spin on it at the same time.
I think my favorite part of that little, like, bridge section is the, I have gone to Moscow. It's very gay. Well, anyway. It's such like a and I like in the book, in the Finishing the Hat book, there's like a big like line after gay. It's like, well, I didn't mean to say that anyway.
Yeah. Well, it takes us back to that Cole Porter thing too, right? Of like dropping in those like hints of like my sexuality, and then kind of moving on into the plot. So I think it's his like little tongue in cheek thing of like really saying to the audience, yes, I know that this is a Cole Porter infused tune.
Right, absolutely. And I've seen so many women who perform this number. This whole number can be done in like a bunch of different ways, but one of my favorites was I like a real like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. Anyway.
Yeah, like almost like a Betty Boop, like oops, sorry.
Yeah.
So we finished the song off by going, Peking has rickshaws, New Orleans jazz, but ah, Paris. Beirut has sunshine, that's all it has, but ah, Paris. Constantinople has Turkish baths, and Athens, that lovely debris. Carlsbad may have a spa, but for ooh la la, you come with me. Carlsbad is where you're cured after you have toured, Paris.
Peking has rickshaws, New Orleans jazz, Paris. Beirut has sunshine, that's all it has, Paris. Constantinople has Turkish baths, and Athens, that lovely debris. Carlsbad may have a spa, but for ooh la la, you come with me. Carlsbad is where you're cured after you have toured.
So I have some favorite rhymes in this one. I love the fact that because she's French, he's rhyming jazz with baths, but she's pronounced it baz. I just think that's fun.
That's really clever too, and it definitely catches up on you. You're not exactly sure. It's like, oh, that's clever.
Yeah, that's fun. That's a fun little lyric that you put into there.
Absolutely.
Do you have any idea of why he uses Carlsbad twice? Like, what is it about Carlsbad that is so good?
I don't specifically, but just based on the context, he mentions Carlsbad may have a spa, and then the next lyric is Carlsbad is where you're cured. So it's like connecting, like you go here after, you know, to be cured after you have toured, to like restore your life after you've been to Paris. You know, it's just, or he ran out of places. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, just ran out of places. There's no more places he could think of. As far as I know, Carlsbad is in California. I'm pretty sure that's correct. But yeah, a huge spa scene there, apparently, which is fun. I also want to bring up the fact that Constantinople, weirdly in the 1987 version, she pronounces it, I think, in a weird way, where she says Constantinople. She really emphasized that very last little bit. Again, I don't know if that was a performance suggestion, like her bringing that into it, or if someone asked her to do that, maybe a director's decision, but it's there on the recording for you to hear.
Right. I don't know. It's maybe she was just really leaning into her French accent.
All right. Well, then we come to the destination of this triplet of songs. This is Broadway Baby. This is sung in the show by the character named Hattie. So the original Broadway cast, this was Ethel Schuta. In the 1987 London version, it was Margaret Courtney. And then in the 2017 National Theatre version, it's Di Botcher, which I actually love that name. I'm sure it's like Diana Botcher or something like that, but I like how it sounds like debauchery.
Yeah, appropriate in some ways for this song.
That's right. This is, again, an interesting song in many ways. I mentioned before about how you can almost like take this out of the show and still sing it and still have like resonance with it. Most of the time, I would say this is sung by one of the more elderly performers in the company, right? Where it's, you know, someone in their like 70s-ish, 60s, 70s, maybe even up into their 80s if they're going to have someone like that. However, I think it's the Sondheim's 80th birthday celebration, they have a very young girl sing it. So I could see them actually going with an actual very young performer or a very old performer. It seems like that's the two polar opposites I've seen this song performed in. I don't know if you have any perspective on how you like to see this song performed.
I think those are the way the song works best, because if you're either a very young person or a very older person, it keeps the song from getting too self-pity, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, kind of, because if you're young, you have the idealism of youth. And if you're, you know, and if you're an older person, then you have, well, I've clearly, you know, I'm singing this song and I'm here. I'm still here, not to quote another song. So it keeps the song from getting too like self, like, oh, I'm just the Broadway baby, you know?
Right. But, yeah, because I could see that, like, you could sing this in, like, a more self-pitying way. In fact, Sondheim talks about this song in his book, Finishing the Hat. He says, the first unfinished version of this song was titled Tough Luck Tessie, and 74-year-old Ethel Schuta's sly, unsentimental performance appropriately saved the song from any hint of self-pity. So I think that's true, where she's able to bring such a performance to this, where it's like, it almost feels like an anthem, like an arousing anthem at the very end, like, yeah, like you've seen some stuff,
right? You're right, and it's like no nonsense. Hold, grandma's gonna sing a song now.
Hold my pearls, I'm about to perform.
You're right.
So this song is written in the style of a 1920s song that was popular before the stock market crash. So it's a very specific time period in America that it's going after. So Sondheim references a couple of songs, but one I wanted to play here is one that's called Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries. So this is sung by Rudy Valley.
Why are we here? Where are we going? It's time that we found out. We're not here to stay. We're on a short holiday. Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't take it serious. It's too mysterious. You work, you save, you worry so, but you can't take your dough when you go, go, go.
It's one of those things when I listen to any song from like that 1920s, early 1930s, it's kind of like the same thing with like announcers. Like, seemingly everyone had the same voice and same accent back then. And it's a very specific sound that I feel you can lock into.
Absolutely. It's almost their emphasis is on the wrong syllable of.
I know.
You're like, what?
The U.S. is on the move. Yeah,
right.
Like that type of
absolutely,
thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is how Broadway Baby starts. So she gets up there and sings, I'm just a Broadway baby. walking off my tired feet, pounding 42nd Street to be in a show. Broadway, baby, learning how to sing and dance, waiting for that one big chance to be in a show. Gee, I'd like to be on some marquee, all twinkling lights, a spark to pierce the dark from Battery Park to Washington Heights.
I'm just a Broadway baby, walking off my tired feet, pounding 42nd Street to be in a show. Broadway baby, learning how to sing and dance, waiting for that one big chance to be in a show. Gee, I'd like to be on some marquee, all twinkling lights, a spark to pierce the dark from Battery Park to Washington Heights.
Now, as someone, Jonathan, who has been in New York probably longer than I have, when you were there for a bit, can you say, give me a quick geography lesson? Where's Battery Park and where's Washington Heights?
Well, Washington Heights is where I lived, and that's in the northern part of the Isle of Manhattan. And I believe, I've never been to Battery Park, but I believe it's in the more the southern area of Manhattan. Right. So she's covering the whole base of Manhattan.
Yeah, she's schlepping along here from north to south.
I believe that's the idea. And I'm sure New York, people who live in New York like more permanently than I do will be like, if I'm wrong. But I believe that's
it's
correct.
More southeast than it is southeast. Yeah.
Right.
Tell me, Jonathan, I mean, I know one of the things you were mentioning to me is that this hits you as a performer. So even from this opening a few lines, what is it about this song that you really, that really speaks to you?
I think this song really gets at the determination that we as performers, whether it be musicals, plays, but just performers in the theater specifically, there's such a hustle and a pounding the pavement attitude you have to have. And the thing that keeps you doing that is this drive, this dream of being in a show, being on Broadway, being in the next thing. And I think this song really captures just that optimism of, no matter how hard it is, I'm going to make it, and I'm going to make it, and I'm going to find my dream.
You know, it's really interesting because there's like this song, there's also I'm Still Here, right? Have these two performers going like, hey, I've seen some things and I've been around for a while and I'm not ready to like walk off into the sunset quite yet. It's this whole feeling that this show permeates, right? Which is like, while you are a performer, even when the show closes or the lights go out, it's like there's still that desire to get up and like put on that show. There's still that desire to be like, hey, all I need is a microphone and like a top hat, and I can put on something here for you.
Right. It's not desperation. That's the wrong word. Mm-hmm. But it is a conviction that only people who are really invested in this business can understand. It's what makes people who are not theater people go, why are you doing that? And you're like, I can't right. help. I can't actually explain it. It's just something you're almost born with it.
Well, there is something to that, right? Where not that I'm really a performer of any type, but the couple of times that I have like been on stage, there's just something electrifying to it. And it's also this weird thing that I tell people a lot, that I actually have a harder time talking to people one-on-one than it is to talk to like a huge group of people if I'm like doing a presentation or anything like that. So it's one of those weird paradoxes of the performer's life.
Sure. And it's definitely, there are a lot of people, myself included in some ways, that it's easier to, when you're performing for people, you can be very vulnerable and personable when there's like a orchestra pit between you and the people. Mm-hmm. But then if you're like, up close and personal with them, it's you know, a little more awkward, you know, and we all ebb and flow in that in life. But I think on a whole, a lot of performers have that in them in some way.
Now, I don't want to get too far away from it before making this specific point. What is so important about 42nd Street?
Oh, well, 42nd Street. 42nd Street, what now is the big touristy area of New York. I mean, like, there's everything. There's Broadway theaters there. There's, you know, every restaurant. It's such a, you know, it's such a thing. But at the time, you know, it was the street, and it wasn't the most glamorous street at the time that maybe this song is referencing. You know, you were walking it, but you also had to, like, you know, watch your pocketbook and maybe not walk at the right time of the day.
Right.
Don't walk in at like 11 o'clock at night. So but it's become this kind of nostalgic image of, oh yeah, I'm walking 42nd Street. I'm going to the theater.
Right.
And it spawned a whole musical. What can I tell you?
That's right. That's true. So she continues on saying, "Someday, maybe, all my dreams will be repaid. Hell, I'll even play the maid to be in a show. Say, Mr. Producer, I'm talking to you, sir. I don't need a lot, only what I got, plus a tube of grease paint and a follow spot. I'm just a Broadway baby, slaving at a 5 and 10, dreaming of the great day when I'll be in a show.
Someday, maybe, all my dreams will be repaid. Hell, I'd even play the maid to be in a show. Say, Mr. Producer, yeah, I'm talking to you, sir. I don't need a lot, only what I've got, plus a tube of grease paint on a follow spot. I'm just a..."
What stands out to you from those stanzas?
My favorite is that little bridge that, "Say, Mr. Producer, I'm talking to you, sir." It's that whole, like, I'm here, I'm ready to perform, and it gives the performer a lot of different, it's just vague enough in how it's presented to give a performer a lot of different ways to approach it, which is fun. Like, I've seen Bernadette Peters perform this song a lot, and to say she's a sexy performer is probably, everyone knows that. That lyric of, "Say, Mr. Producer, I'm talking to you, sir," that gets pretty hot. That's all I'm saying. But I love the, you know, again, it goes back to the, I'm just a Broadway baby. I'm working at a, you know, a 5 to 10 job. You know what I mean? I'm doing what I have to do to survive because I'm going to make it.
I always consider, maybe that is what he's talking about. I always thought the 5 and 10 was a way to use a 5 and dime restaurant, because a 10-cent piece is also called a dime.
Right.
So I thought it was an interesting way to phrase that.
And it might be. Yeah. I don't know for sure. One of my favorite performers of this song had like a, her version, she gestured like, she did like a gesture of like as a waitress. So I kind of, that's how I picked it up in my opinion. Yeah.
The line that says, "Hell, I'd even play the maid." Hell is only used in the original Broadway cast. In both the 1987 and 2017 versions, they change it to heck, which I'm not 100% sure why they decided to do that, but they did. So it's, "Heck, I'll even play the maid." I guess you can't say that the H word anymore on stage. Censorship.
I love it. I just think there's something so great about going, "Hell, I'd even play the maid." I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. It just feels better to say.
The other thing I wanted to bring up here too is, I mean, many lyricists do the same thing here, but I just love how we're getting conditioned here in this song for her to start each kind of new thought being like, "Broadway baby, I'm just a Broadway baby." And then, "Someday maybe," like, because that rhymes with that phrase. I think that's just so great that he's able to work that into this song as well.
Absolutely. And it's at the point where you're expecting her to say "Broadway baby" again, and then she doesn't.
Screw you.
Right, right.
So here's how the song ends, at least sort of, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but here's how the song ends. "Broadway baby, making rounds all afternoon, eating at a greasy spoon to save on my dough. At my tiny flat, there's just my cat, a bed and a chair. Still, I'll stick it till I'm on a bill all over Times Square. Someday, maybe, if I stick it long enough, I might get to strut my stuff, working for a nice man like a Ziegfeld or a Wiseman in a great big Broadway show.
Broadway, baby, making rounds all afternoon, eating at a greasy spoon to save on my dough. At my tiny flat, there's just my cat, a bed and a chair. Still, I'll stick it till I'm on a bill all over Times Square.
New York has long, every has long, second part of your name. Shanghai, yes, it's happened straight to be in a show.
So the first thing I want to say, I say like sort of how it ends, is once again, on the original Broadway cast, they cut out a bunch of this stuff. So when she starts off making my rounds all afternoon, they actually cut that out. So she goes from slaving at a 5 and 10, dreaming of the great day when I'll be in a show, and then it jumps right to the very end. Someday, maybe, if I stick it long enough, I may get to strut my stuff. So that very last stanza. So they cut out those other 2 points, which is too bad, because there's some great stuff in there that they kind of remove, unfortunately. But what do you think about this ending piece?
Oh, I agree. I think I don't know what it is about that bridge section. He really is able to write some good stuff there. But I love the "at my tiny flat, there's just my cat." I just think it's a great image of the way an actor has to survive, and it's still true to this day. Now, granted, there's more than a cat there most of the time these days. It's usually you and 6 other people. But
that's true. It's just my cat plus Alice and Ted, and
exactly. And also, I don't. And you know, and it. Again, it's that determination factor that we've been talking about. But and I also just love, you mentioned they cut that out of the original Broadway cast, I'm surprised, because from all accounts, this was the best part of Ethel's performance, because she kicked her cat. Like, she
did, she really?
She, oh, would, I didn't mind, know that. She would mind kicking her cat when she said it.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's a bit of a travesty that they had to cut so much out of that original Broadway cast.
I don't understand it. I just don't.
Honestly, for me, I don't know what it is, but every performance I hear this in, the one that gives me like the little goosebumps and my hair standing up is, I love the way, like, working for a nice man like a Ziegfeld or a Wiseman. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just, there's a nice way that lyric rolls off the tongue.
Absolutely.
And because we've been introduced to Wiseman at the very beginning, like, we get it. Like, we understand what's going on.
Right. And it's just such an, and the way the music starts just swelling under that, it's such an exciting way to end the song.
Now, I will say that, I don't know if this is common practice, but most of the productions in this section, what they do is that in that very final stanza, like, all three performances kind of converge on one another. So you have like Rain on the Roof and Au Paris and Broadway Baby being sung simultaneously in that last little bit, which I can't imagine being very easy to do, because A, different rhythms, different melodies, and trying to sing that all together and then still all ending with that last bit, like working for a nice man all the way to in a great big Broadway show. And that's how everyone kind of ends, lights out, thunderous applause type of thing.
Right.
So do you have a definitive version? Is there a version that you're like, that you go to listen to the most?
My definitive version of this song, and actually of all three of these songs, is actually not one of the recordings we've listened to.
Of course not.
But I do love those recordings. But it is the 2011 Broadway recording, only because It was the first time that I heard all three songs in a row, kind of in context, because they did a lot of the dialogue from the show on that recording.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did them the triple ending, as we just talked about. And I was just so like gobsmacked by how amazing it was to hear these three songs that sound nothing alike then somehow come together at the end. And it's just such a like a it as if Broadway Baby isn't exciting enough, then when they all start singing again, it just gets so like, ah.
That's the Kennedy Center's production?
Yes, and then it moved to Broadway.
There was another one that was like, I wonder if that's a 2007 edition. There's one in, there's a Broadway revival of Follies that I remember somewhat listening to that is, I think, so weird. Oh, it's a 2001 version. The 2001 version where they basically cast a bunch of really great actors, but not really great singers to sing. And I always thought that was a disappointment because like, oh, your acting is great, but the songs are not all that good to listen to.
We don't talk about that one.
We don't talk. That's been stricken from the record books.
No, I'm sure everyone was very talented, but
I've asked you this before, but I always like to ask this if there's a performer on the podcast, which is, let's say a producer does approach you and it's like, hey, Jonathan, you have free reign to interpret Broadway Baby in whatever way that you want. What would you do?
Oh, my. I think, you know, I would interpret it from just my own experience as a performer. You know, I think it's like it's one of those songs that's so specific that it allows you to really bring a lot of yourself to it. So I would probably mostly just stand in the middle of a stage and just sing and interpret the song. It's not a song that I think requires a lot of, you know, movement, a lot of, you know, if anything, it's a stomping song. It's like, no, this is it. This is what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's a song of determination. So I would just, you know, stand center stage, sing my guts out and just make the audience know, no, I'm going to be in that Broadway show.
That's cool. Well, when that happens, let me know so I can come and watch it because I would love to.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears.
So, Jonathan, because, again, time is weird, I think we're currently in June right now. Let's say that we are. How can people find you on the internet? And is there anything that you might be doing at that time that people can check out?
Wow. Well, nothing that I know specifically, but you can always follow me on Instagram at JSCHISOLM22. And I update everybody on what I'm doing, whether it be auditioning or performing. And sometimes I post videos, you know, whatever I can to keep myself from going crazy.
Yeah, I'm this close to breaking down and doing Instagram videos of me singing these three songs specifically. So we'll see how much I break over the next few days.
That would be amazing.
Cool. Thanks again, Jonathan.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Also, if you're listening to this in the Apple Podcast app, you can leave a review and a rating, which is hugely beneficial to the show, too. Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, and to Park Power this week. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. On the next episode, we'll be talking about The Road You Didn't Take, but who remembers that? As always, a big thanks to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. Well, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now. All right, I'm going to do this. Fast forward through this if you don't want to hear me try and sing Rain on the Roof. Listen to the rain on the roof go pit, pity, pat, pit, pity, pat, pity, sit, kitty cat. We won't get home for hours. Relax and listen to the rain on the roof go plunk, plank, a plink, plunk, plank, a plink, plank, a let's have a drink and shelter from the showers. Rain, rain, don't go away. Fill up the sky. Rain through the night. We'll stay cozy and dry. Listen to the rain on the roof go pit patty pit, plunk a plink plank. Pity that it's not a hurricane. Listen plink to the lovely rain. Well, even if I had a bucket, I couldn't carry a tune.